why would they?
The captain's report.
The captain's log.
I was
Stardate. And the Sea of Cortez.
I was the executive officer of our ship, but I was not the supreme commander, I'll tell you that. Anyway, speaking of the ocean, we have a letter here from the Ocean Protection Council. See how I segued?
Yeah.
This is a supplemental sheet that Carol copied for you. And it's related to the Morro Bay Cayucas plant upgrade. And I don't know if you've had a chance to read the letter. They apparently had some input from folks who were encouraging the Ocean Protection Council. And just by way of review, the Ocean Protection Council members are Mike Crispin, who's the Secretary of Resources, John Garamendi, the Lieutenant Governor, Linda Adams, the Secretary for Environmental Protection. And then there are two ex officio members, Daryl Steinberg and your friend Pedro Nava. And so some folks came before the council at their recent meeting. This topic wasn't on the agenda, but they did go so far as to write this letter to Morro Bay Cayucas saying, please report back to us at our next Ocean Protection Council meeting on what you did and explain the basis for your decision. So that's that. We are planning on attending that meeting of the Morro Bay Cayucas Joint Powers Group when they take up this issue. Of course, we have been strongly encouraging the two agencies to upgrade to secondary treatment on a voluntary basis, and it certainly seems they're headed in that direction. And actually now it seems like the real question is whether or not they will not only go to secondary but also take that next step to tertiary. And along those lines, I've received a few emails, and I printed out one because they're identical. And let me just read it to you. It's to the two entities, the city and the district. I urge you to vote on May 24th to upgrade the Morro Bay Cayucas Wastewater Treatment Plant to tertiary treatment, the highest standard, fastest timeline as possible. For more than 20 years, the Morro Bay Cayucas plant has received a waiver from having to meet basic national standards for clean water. The plant's discharge point is just a half mile offshore near popular beaches and threatened California sea otter habitat. In fact, Morro Bay's surrounding waters have become a hot spot for sea otter deaths. Only tertiary treatment would allow the plant to reuse its treated wastewater for irrigation, freeing up scarce drinking water for residents, potentially eliminating wastewater discharge to the ocean during much of the year. Also, an upgrade to tertiary treatment would cost only a dollar more per household per month than secondary treatment. Because of the importance of protecting our oceans by upgrading the plant to tertiary treatment, I'm also copying other local leaders, Assemblyman Blakesley and State Senator Maldonado, as well as the Central Coast Water Board. An upgrade to tertiary treatment is the right thing to do for California's public health, marine life, water resources, and economy. And that's the email I've received, and I've received, well, as of last night, it was about 800 emails, although it seemed like I was getting double emails, so it might have been actually more like 400 emails, because they said they were copying us, so I had the pleasure of receiving those. Also, along the same lines, there's a nearly identical text, very minor variation of the text, so I won't read it, but from Cal Poly, I received this letter, which is signed by a whole bunch of people, 58 people. I know several of them are students because I recognize the ones who work here. so I think maybe they're all students from Cal Poly. And like I said, the envelope came from Cal Poly. And then I received this batch, which again is the same, virtually the same text. And these are individually signed, and I didn't count them, but there are this many. But basically the same text. So, as I said, we're planning on attending that meeting. We will encourage the two agencies to upgrade for tertiary treatment, not that we feel it's necessary from the standpoint of necessary for the receiving waters of the ocean, but certainly if they can upgrade to tertiary, they should be reclaiming that water. They shouldn't be wasting that resource to the ocean. And so from that standpoint, if it in fact is as inexpensive as stated, we think that would be a great thing to do, just as we encourage all recycling reclamation in our region. I did see, it's kind of hearsay because it's a newspaper report, but the mayor was quoted as saying that dollar per month is inaccurate. That's low. It doesn't count for ongoing operation and maintenance. Doesn't count for recycled water reclamation. I mean, distribution system and that sort of thing. I don't know what the real number is, but that's what's before the Morro Bay Cayucas folks. And of course, our permit is on hold, based on I guess we're still waiting for input on from Fish and Wildlife Service and EPA on the biological opinion. But in the meantime, the project is moving forward, which is a good thing. So hopefully the project will march on regardless of the permit delays.
But it's marching on to full secondary treatment, right? Not tertiary treatment.
Well, but then this is the decision that's before the two agencies.
Yeah, but when you say it's marching on, they're not breaking ground.
No.
At this point.
Is Matt here? Thompson? Okay. Do you have anything to add, Harvey, as far as where they are in the process?
Harvey Packard. I'm not sure what the schedule is. They're still in facilities design, I know, so there's still some time away from breaking ground.
Okay.
Okay.
And any questions on Morro Bay and Cayucas? All righty. Let's see. One of the items we have on page 7 of the executive officer's report are the grant projects that list active grant projects that are under our management. We have several staff here who manage grant projects and I think are available for questions. Is that right, Angela? Did you have anything you wanted to add, Angela?
No, just that.
Angela Schroeder of our staff. Have you met Angela before?
I don't think so.
This is Angela Schroeder of our staff. She's our senior, our supervisor for our grants management unit.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I think all the information
microphone.
Is here.
Microphone.
All the information is here on the spreadsheet that you need. This is our active projects that we have. It doesn't reflect those that are managed by State Board, which are Clean Beaches grants, small community wastewater grants. So we have over 30 projects right now, and for a total of, I think, about almost just under $30 million. And the way we manage grants here is basically throughout all the programs. So we identify staff who have an expertise programmatically as well as technically or in the watershed, rather than have them all housed in the grants unit. So we are really, through the grants program, trying to do lots of cross-program coordination and sharing technical expertise with the grantees to get projects that really meet our healthy, functioning watersheds vision.
I'm sorry, Angela, which chart are you referring to?
So grant spreadsheet.
It's an attachment.
This one.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Is there any questions?
Is the time for folks to apply for grants, is that varied depending on the grant, or does our board have one?
It varies by the funding source.
Okay.
And the Prop 84 fund source is currently developing guidelines, so that will be the next funding program to roll out.
And is the regional board going to have any ability to disperse Prop 84 funding? I thought that was through DWR.
It will be through State Board and DWR.
Okay. So then we will have some input into that.
We definitely have input to the process.
Okay. Thanks.
Are you wondering about at a staff level or board level or just regional board input?
Just regional board input.
Okay.
in general. I just want to make sure that, I mean, this is a huge, huge bond, a huge bundle of money, and I certainly hope that, you know. When I heard that DWR was going to be handling it, I had shucks.
DWR will handle a bulk of the money, especially that dedicated to.
Well, I'm glad to hear that some, at least, will have some input. So, good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I just want to point out that that amount of money, $30 million, it represents a huge effort on the part of our grants team, Angela, and the rest of the team, And it is the size that it is because they put a lot of work into it. And more so than recent years, we've been trying to get ahead of the curve and to work with grantees or with prospective grantees and get them to submit projects that we want to support, the kind of projects that would go towards meeting our vision of healthy functioning watersheds. And we've been pretty successful in doing that. So I want to say thanks to Angela and the grants team for all that work. And it's I think we're probably among the most successful regions, if not the most successful region, in getting these funds.
Yeah, I have one more question. I know there's a group that's meeting, Central Coast folks, mostly San Luis Obispo, Monterey County, and Santa Cruz County folks meeting, mostly water. This is mostly Prop 50 money, but it also goes over into Prop 84 and Prop 1E. And they're meeting on a sort of regular basis to try and come up with some regional approach so that they can be more successful. And I was wondering if the staff here is tuned into those meetings at all.
I believe you're speaking about the Integrated Regional Watershed Management Program.
I think that's it, yeah.
And staff here is very involved. Bill Hoffman is here who can answer some questions about that. But yeah, we intend, regardless of whether State Board or DWR manages these grants, to weigh in on that process.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Any other board questions? Okay, thank you.
The next thing I want to mention is somewhat related in that these are projects in which the board is responsible for steering funds in their direction and making them possible. And that's the spreadsheet that was part of a supplemental sheet. It was attached to the supplemental sheet. It's the color printed spreadsheet on supplemental environmental projects. And it is... it's not the smallest. We try to make it the smallest font possible. It's microfiche font. I did send to nearly all of you the electronic version, which is easier to see on the screen, because I realize the way it prints out. In order to get it all on the page, it's pretty dang small. So my apologies for that. However, again, this represents a huge number of projects that are these are opportunities we do not have in our regular regulatory program. So they're really projects that are outside of our budget. It's really a fantastic way to leverage what we do with a lot of these watershed projects and some lasting projects that have some huge water quality impacts and are very beneficial for watersheds. Just the other day, Dr. Hunter contacted me to ask me to get in touch with Rick Hawley of GreenSpace, and I didn't realize it in time until I talked to Rick Hawley, who's the executive director for GreenSpace, but they ended up getting the contract, I guess, for the management of the one that's listed here as number 7, which is the Santa Rosa Creek Enhancement Project. You might remember that was an outgrowth of the Cambria School erosion problem. You might also remember that it's a fish barrier removal project, similar to what Howard was talking about with the Mare Dam, although in this case it's removal of a culvert and replacing it with, I guess, a bridge so the water can underflow. And this will free up habitat for a stretch of Santa Rosa Creek that was identified by Fish and Game as the first priority, and it was identified by GreenSpace as their first priority in terms of potential for increase in habitat for fish. So, you know, really a fantastic opportunity, and the board's really responsible for that happening. So, again, here's another example of a universe of projects where we're leveraging what we do for these real tangible projects out in the region. So between this, between the grants projects, between the projects that Howard was talking about with the AVLA fund, there are two other main groups of projects. One of those is the Guadalupe fund with that group of projects that are similar to the AVLA fund as far as the group of projects that are being funded. And then the last one would be the so-called back flushing settlement with projects that are funded. A lot of those are agriculture related and monitoring related, associated with agriculture. Am I missing any other main group of funds? I'm saying this partly for Dr. Press's benefit, and I think we'll provide an update that will be similar to this for all the board, but I think it sounds like you in particular would be particularly interested in that information.
Yeah.
Pardon me, the back question? Yeah, that was my question. Right.
The other main one, Roger, is the money that was provided to the Bay Foundation for work there from another PG&E settlement.
Right, from Diablo.
Diablo Canyon.
Right. That's been around for so long that I guess I forgot about it. But, yeah, there's still money sitting there. The Bay Foundation has been very frugal in their use of that money, and they've been leveraging that money, similar to the Elkhorn Slough Foundation for the $7 million that you mentioned earlier.
And Dan Berman gave a presentation to the board at the last board meeting on what they've been doing.
Okay. All right. So, unless there are any questions on that one, that is that topic.
Ahoy, matey.
Mm-hmm.
It just occurs to me, almost all these projects are in San Luis Obispo County. Is there some sort of reason for that? Or?
That's where I live. Well, next is of the fund.
Well, are these all from one fund?
Those are SEPs.
I know, these are SEPs, right. So they're from different funds, right? So I'm just wondering why they're all in San Luis Obispo County.
Well, they aren't all.
Not that they shouldn't be, but
they aren't all in San Luis Obispo County.
I'm just sort of curious as to why other parts of the region aren't involved in SEPs, or.
But if you look at the responsible party column,
right
I know.
They're
I mean,
almost all coming.
So they're all the.
So maybe
all the crimes
to,
are committed here, too.
We need to encourage our Monterey County folks to consider.
Are you saying we should be fining people in Santa Cruz and Monterey County more?
Well,
the one we just,
I don't know. It's just odd.
I shouldn't mention one we just talked about. There's another Santa Cruz County SEP.
I know. I want some Monterey County bad guys.
there's Santa Barbara, a couple Santa Barbara projects. There's a Lompoc project. I don't want to say that San Luis Obispo dischargers are worse, but maybe they're better in terms of SEPs. I don't know.
It's also up to the discharger. It's the discharger's decision.
I understand that. It's just
okay.
And these are not. This is not an all-inclusive list in terms of all the SEPs that we've had in the history of the region. These are just the ones that are ongoing. So we've had others in Monterey County.
It doesn't rise to the level of Ripley's, believe it or not.
Okay.
It's just curious.
Okay. All right. So any other questions on the projects part of it? There was one last thing I wanted to mention.
Go ahead.
And that is Dr. Wolf had brought this up earlier as far as our upcoming off-site meeting, which we're having partially on-site, partially off-site, on June 6th. The on-site part is going to be more the formal meeting part, where we're going to have the first three-hour segment from 9:30 to 12:30 on the strategic plan update. That's the statewide strategic plan update. And for that, we have developed a list that we've tried to have a cross-section of our stakeholders, an overused term, but nonprofits, NGOs, private industry, municipalities, counties, that sort of thing, water districts. And we've sent out the invitation letter. I think our RSVP date was last Wednesday or something like that, Lisa. And we didn't get a huge response. We anticipated that we would not get a huge response. And so what we had predetermined to do was to actually call each one individually and twist their arms. And
how many are on the list?
60-some.
Mm.
So, and it's a structured, facilitated session with specific periods already outlined, and we're going to have that notice out within the next week or so, I think. We're working on the notice for that. So that'll be the first 3 hours of the meeting. We'll probably have a little break for a snack, and then we're going to have an item where we update you on our vision efforts and where we are with our vision and measurable goals for the region, which I think will be, hopefully will be a good tie-in with the strategic planning efforts. And then the off-site part of the meeting is the annual awards barbecue extravaganza, which is going to be at the park over across Broad Street over here. So I hope most of you can make it. Mm-hmm. And for those of you who can attend the barbecue, you'll probably be able to take in most of it and the awards portion by 5 p.m. or so, I would think, so that those of you who are farther away can still get home at a decent hour. Any questions on the upcoming offsite?
Any questions?
Just one. I'm having trouble with that today. We are inviting folks to attend the morning session. Will they also be invited to sit in on the second half of the day?
That's part of the regional board meeting, so yeah, it'll be open.
Good. Okay.
Not the picnic.
Not the picnic.
No, not the picnic. That's
the on-site. The on-site part.
Off-site on-site meeting.
No, the picnic is going to have several CHPs guarding it. So.
Good idea.
And the morning session will also be open to the public. It's not invitation only because it's a notice board meeting.
Yes, I had already had questions about that from some of the folks that I've been in touch with about it.
Yeah, and we are going to try to make clear in the notice the opportunity for the public input as opposed to the different role of those who are invited to be in the facilitated session. So that's one of the things we're trying to make clear in the notice.
Yes.
Lisa wants to add something here.
I just want to explain the logistics of the actual meeting because I know some of you might be talking with, I know Monica in particular, with stakeholders who are interested in coming. So the way this will work is we've invited these 60 folks. We're really going to try to get those 60 folks. We're asking them if they can't attend themselves to appoint somebody to represent them and their organization and their interest. If other people come, because it will be publicly noticed, they are welcome to come, and we're going to explain this in that notice, that they will be asked to be in the observer status during the meeting. But everyone, whether they're involved in the interactive facilitated discussions at the meeting or not, has the opportunity to answer the questions and provide their direct responses to all of the items that will be discussed during the facilitated meeting. If it's not overly crowded and we can accommodate the people who come as observers into the smaller group discussions, the way they're going to facilitate it, we're going to do that on the fly that morning. But we just don't want to get into a situation where we have so many people trying to be integrated into small group discussions that they're large group discussions, and so we can't get good input. So we're going to try to work with the professional facilitators who are doing this for the whole state that morning to make that work as well as possible.
Thank you.
That's a subject again. Thanks for that.
Anything else?
That was it for my executive officer's report, unless there are any questions.
Yes, there are. Mm-hmm. Karen.
Oh, just the usual.
I'd like to know about the toxicity stuff in here on page 4. And, you know, was it a couple of years ago at our off-site meeting at the Yacht Club you gave us a presentation?
I think I've done one a couple of years in a row, actually.
Was it last year? Only last year? God. Okay. The information here is subsequent to what you showed us at the offsite?
That's our Santa Maria data. I'm sorry.
Well, it's in the Salinas watershed.
Salinas, yeah. That's just the we try to routinely do toxicity. We're trying for twice a year. It's pretty budget dependent as part of our regular watershed rotation. So that's just the report on what we found this year.
On this year?
Well, yeah, it was this last sampling year.
Okay, but subsequent to what you showed us at the Yacht Club?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, are these different rivers?
I don't remember what I showed you at the Yacht Club. We have data from...
Well, it was pretty dramatic.
Yeah, we have pretty dramatic toxicity problems in our region, particularly in the lower Salinas and lower Santa Maria watersheds.
Yeah.
We're seeing sediment toxicity in several of our large estuaries that are important wildlife habitat. And, you know, we've seen it both in urban areas and in ag areas. We just completed a study with a UC Berkeley researcher who showed He actually did sediment toxicity going down from above the city of Salinas down through the city. He showed toxicity in both the ag areas and the urban areas with a different signal, a chemical signal in the two different areas, which implied that it actually there is an urban contribution, which we're seeing in other parts of the state as well. We're seeing pyrethroid pesticides showing up in sediments in urban areas that are 20 times, 40 times the lethal levels. So it's that is a real emerging problem because that chemical, that suite of chemicals is coming in to replace some of the organophosphates that are causing the water column toxicity that have been banned now in urban areas but are still used in ag areas.
Okay. Couple of questions about this. Are you going to be doing toxicity testing throughout the Central Coast region?
We try to do it with our watershed rotation.
Right.
So, you know, as we move through each year, we generally can't do every site, so we prioritize according to what the land uses are.
Okay.
Our budget is still bouncing around quite a bit at the state level.
Okay.
So, and that's, you know, we try to maintain the conventional water quality, and then the toxicity is a little bit more budget dependent.
And then it says here, these findings have been relayed to storm water staff working with both the cities of Santa Maria and Salinas. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Well, in the city of Salinas, for example, there's been quite a lot of interaction with the city, with one discharger in particular, and some of the stormwater folks. We found a trail of broccoli, actually, that had produce tags on it and associated toxicity. It was pretty easy, actually, to identify that source. And they've been working quite actively with that discharger to address the problem. And in the city of Santa Maria, I think Mary's been interacting quite a lot with Ryan, and I think she met with Brad Hagman to discuss some of the toxicity findings we've been seeing coming out of just downstream of the city. So they're starting the dialogue there.
Did you send them a notice of violation?
I don't believe so.
Is that something that could be sent?
Presumably.
No?
That's not...
Yeah. I mean, it just sounds like...
I think in the case of the city of Santa Maria, they're saying that that particular discharge has influence from ag, underground ag flows. So it's a little unclear.
But is that a storm drain? That it's for Santa Maria? What?
Yeah.
Well, is it their storm drain?
Presumably.
Yeah.
Do you know
well,
the details on that?
I mean, if it's their storm drain, but maybe there's different sources contributing to it, mm-hmm. I would think that they're responsible, you know, for what's coming out of the end of the storm drain.
Well, there aren't numeric effluent limits in the permit, so
right,
that's not a violation.
But the toxicity is in the permit, right? Aren't there?
No, they have to do BMPs to address it, and there's some narrative prohibitions. They obviously have to investigate the source, but I'd have to look at the permit and the stormwater management plan, but the toxicity isn't necessarily a violation.
Of that, is it a violation of anything?
Not that I can think of.
Basin plan?
Yeah. Basin plan?
If there's an applicable prohibition.
Discharge of...
Toxic substances toxic and toxic amounts?
Yes.
Well, that's a water quality objective. That's not a prohibition.
Okay, but if you... I'm missing something here.
Well, earlier, when talking about stormwater, Lori was saying that the objectives are not directly enforceable.
Right.
Prohibitions are. So that's a distinction you're making.
Yeah, I need to look at their permit and their stormwater management plan and the basin plan.
Maybe in the future we could wordsmith so that everything is in the form of a prohibition.
I have seen provisions like that in other regions
or,
of basin plans.
Or at least things that were
made. Prohibitions in some of the basin plans.
Also, you know, the Salinas issue has been going on for quite a while, and they've had some time to, you know, begin working with the discharger and the situation. I think the Santa Maria one is a more recent, and the dialogue is just beginning.
Well, so what approach is staff going to use as C-Camp continues rotating through the region, and you're able to do some toxicity monitoring here and there, and you start to develop this growing database of evidence of toxicity?
It's pretty ubiquitous one of the concerns and problems. And, you know, obviously we have tools, the Ag Waiver Program, stormwater programs, and that's where it's got to happen. So, you know, we try to relay the information as we find it.
Well, we are.
We also have other kinds of violations, like, you know, we have nitrate, drinking water violations everywhere.
Well, as I mentioned earlier when we were commending Mary Adams for the C-Camp program,
right.
we had data. Part of that data was toxicity data prior to working on the regulation of irrigated agriculture. We used that information to make as much headway as we did with the ag industry to support what we were doing.
Right.
We knew that, you know, just because the board adopts the conditions for irrigated ag, that doesn't mean that water quality changes. We knew that it's going to take years to gradually make those land use changes, those practice changes, and then hopefully we'll be able to see improvements through our long-term monitoring. But part of the reason for having these monitoring sites is to see where the worst spots are, follow up in those sub-watersheds, and see if there are individual practices that can be pinpointed that need to have improvements. So, I don't know, does that kind of sum up the approach with toxicity? I'm looking at Allison.
You know, ag, I mean, that makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
That approach here we have.
I'm thinking more about stormwater.
Well, yeah, now I guess I'm shifting. Okay, so, but what do we do with this? And maybe the swamps. We use this as information to revisit some of these swamps when they're in their permit or being renewed or reviewed or what have you. And we say, okay, this is data, and you've got to now propose BMPs that are going to address this.
Right.
I mean,
I do think it's really important that we consider both sediment and water toxicity when we're looking. If we look at, like, regionalized monitoring for stormwater, because it is pretty prevalent in urban discharges.
Well,
also,
we rely, you know, the board relies on you guys, the technical experts, and, you know, I read a paragraph like this, and, you know, my eyes start to bug out, and I just want to know that we're doing something about it, you know, or have a plan to do something about it, which is going to bring about a change in that. So,
yes, please.
The TMDLs, the ones we're going to implement at some point.
Yes. Santa Maria. We have initiated work on the Santa Maria pesticide TMDL.
Yeah.
That is, the impairment is supported by toxicity, evidence of toxicity in the water bodies as well as presence of some pesticides. So, when we get to sorting out exactly all the sources, which clearly, from what Karen told you, are going to include the urban discharges as well as some agricultural discharges, then we will assign allocations to those responsible parties, and then we can make the requirements most likely via the existing regulatory mechanisms, which in the case of the urbanized areas would be the stormwater permit and stormwater programs, and then through the ag waiver for the agricultural discharger. So if the existing management practices and activities for compliance with those mechanisms don't currently appear to be addressing the ability to meet those allocations, then we will attend to making additional or changes to the stormwater management program or how folks are implementing in order to be able to demonstrate that they're in compliance with those allocations.
Okay. How about this with the swamps? I mean, that, you know, although with our phase two we don't have monitoring requirements necessarily, I would think this would give rise to a need to have a swamp holder.
To have a what?
Monitoring. Some specific monitoring to check compliance of BMPs that we would request to address toxicity.
Right, particularly if particularly if they're subject to attachment 4, and I believe Santa Maria is.
Yes.
Salinas already has a monitoring requirement, yeah. But because it's a phase 1, they've got a monitoring plan. For Santa Maria, if they're subject to attachment 4, which they are, one of those requirements is if they're causing or contributing to an exceedance of a water quality objective, they have to basically upgrade their BMPs until they meet the receiving water objective. And then I also looked at the permit, so back to your question on whether we can issue NOVs, there are prohibitions in the permit itself, and one of them is that discharges from the MS4s regulated under the general permit that cause or threaten to cause nuisances are prohibited. So anything that would threaten to exceed a water quality objective is a nuisance. There's also a prohibition against, well, this is actually an effluent limit. Stormwater discharges shall not contain hazardous substances in amount equal to or in excess of a reportable quantity. Just because there's toxicity in the effluent doesn't necessarily mean there's a constituent that's been detected in excess of the RQ, but it's something that could be looked at.
Have we issued Santa Maria's swamp?
Yes.
We have.
No.
We haven't.
No.
Okay. Good. I mean, this is...
Characterization. I mean, when TMDL does the characterization, that's going to play... I mean, that's going to help us a lot. Brian and Mary were down there talking to the people that are riding that swamp. And so I think we're moving in the right direction. But as far as an NOV, I was thinking more in terms of maybe some kind of request for information or demand for information under 13267 or 13383 or whatever it is to try to characterize that. And I think that's probably what Lisa's doing with the TMDL.
That's fine with me. You guys are in charge of that end of things, you know, in terms of getting a response and feedback, because I don't know all the tools you have. But, you know, I think, you know, there's an opportunity here with Santa Maria Swamp.
Absolutely.
To take some of this information that Karen's developing, and that, don't take my comments, Karen, as any kind of criticism of what you're doing, but I think it's so valuable that it's got to be utilized, you know, on the other end of what we do. So, and are we going to review Santa Maria's permit? Has it been? Is it going to come to the board?
There's a request for a hearing.
Oh gosh. Okay.
I mean, Brad again. There's a request for a hearing for everyone.
Brad,
so far.
Did you see Brad Hageman? I thought he
moved from Paso Robles to Santa Maria.
They chased him out?
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions by the board? We're done. We got the hook. Thank you, and we'll see you at the offsite meeting. Right? Adios.